This episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/AC and get a free trial of premium membership. This episode is also sponsored by Headspace. Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/accidentalcreative for a free 1 month trial and access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm also the author of the brand new book, The Motivation Code, available now wherever books are sold. So where is all of this headed? Where are we going in 2021? And I think an interesting question is, what of all of the things we're experiencing right now is actually going to stick with us on the other side of this? I think that there are a lot of things, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, there are a lot of things that we're experiencing and adapting to right now that might remain the same on the other side of the pandemic, about the way that we work, about some of the tools that we're using, about some of the trends that we're experiencing. I think that we're discovering new ways of working, some of which might actually stick with us. Well, I wanted to go straight to someone who has his finger on the pulse of the creative community specifically, and that person is Scott Belsky. Scott is the chief product officer at Adobe. He's also the author of one of my favorite books of the last decade called The Messy Middle. It came out a couple of years ago. You can go listen to the interview I did with Scott about that book a while ago. But Scott has and his team have been looking at some of what's been going on over the last several months about the way people are working and interacting, the kinds of tools that they're using, and what is likely to maybe stick around in the future as we progress toward hopefully moving beyond this pandemic. And so on this episode, Scott and I have a really great conversation about some of these trends, some of the tactics that we can employ to help us be more effective, and generally just what leaders and teams can do to position themselves to be in a good place on the other side of the pandemic. So that conversation with Scott is coming up in just a minute. Before we dive into that, a couple of things. This week is the first round of Creative Leader Roundtable. So if you go to creativeleaderroundtable.com, there's still a couple of days to sign up if you're listening to this prior to January 29th. Still a couple of days to sign up if you're interested. So check it out at creativeleaderroundtable.com. Also, this episode is brought to you by Headspace. So listen, even in the new year, it's hard to start a new routine. But if you're one of the 34% of Americans who made a resolution to be less stressed, I think that's so many of us, Headspace is here to help. Headspace is your daily dose of mindfulness in the form of guided meditations in an easy-to-use app. Headspace is one of the only meditation apps advancing the field of mindfulness and meditation through clinically validated research. So whatever the situation, Headspace really can help you feel better. Are you overwhelmed? Headspace has a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Headspace has wind-down sessions their members swear by. And for parents, Headspace even has morning meditations you can do with your kids. Headspace's approach to mindfulness can reduce stress, improve sleep, boost focus, and increase your overall sense of well-being. I love Headspace primarily because it's so simple to use. There are simple meditations for almost any kind of circumstance or outcome. You can meditate for as long as you want. What I love about it is it makes it kind of a no-brainer. It's so easy for me just to say, you know what, I've got 10 minutes right now. I'm just going to do a quick meditation session, or 3 minutes, or 5 minutes, or 20 minutes, or whatever it is. It's so easy. And there are any number of different outcomes. You want to focus better. You want to, in some way, like relieve stress. Headspace has a meditation dedicated to helping you do these things. It's so useful, so easy to use. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, over 600,000 five-star reviews, over 60 million downloads. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice with mindfulness that works for you on your schedule, anytime, anywhere. Listen, you deserve to feel happier, and Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/accidentalcreative. That's headspace.com/accidentalcreative for a free 1 month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. This is the best deal offered right now. So head to headspace.com/accidentalcreative today. We thank Headspace for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have back on the show today, Scott Belsky. Scott is the Chief Product Officer at Adobe. Also, by the way, the author of one of my favorite books of the last decade, The Messy Middle. It came out a couple of years ago. And actually, I'm going to go, I think I'm due for a reread, Scott, of The Messy Middle, because it's just a phenomenal book. But Scott Belsky, welcome back to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Thanks, Todd. Great to be here.
So you really kind of sit in a unique position where you are helping, obviously helping develop products for the creative community, for creative professionals globally. You also obviously are in a position where you see a lot of the macro trends that are going on right now. And the reason that I was excited to have you on the show is I thought you could speak very specifically and uniquely to some of what is going on right now in the marketplace. And Adobe, obviously being the phenomenal company that it is, and obviously the very customer-centric company that it is, has been doing a tremendous amount of research on how some of the the events of the past year has been affecting the creative community. And so really wanted to kind of have you on to talk about some of those trends. Just from a top level perspective, Scott, what are some things that you are seeing right now from your position that you think are changes that probably are going to stay with us for the foreseeable future?
First of all, we don't know what this new way of working is like without the Zoom school stuff and without the anxiety and angst every day from a virus, raging in our population and everything else. So when I hear some folks talk about the newfound benefits of not having commutes anymore and having more flexibility, et cetera, I always remind myself that that's despite and not because of the other conditions, that we're dealing with. And I think a lot of us also feel pretty burned out. And we may attribute it to the fact that our schedules, don't have the breaks that they typically do. But it also can be attributed probably to just the stress and the anxiety that, then spills over into our work and how we feel about our work. So that is to say, Todd, that we don't really know, right? How we'll feel with some of the acceleration of digital transformation, for lack of a better term, once the dust settles with all the other stuff that is distracting us these days. But I think it's fair to say that we will come back post-virus to a world where when we're in person together, it will be with a greater degree of intention as opposed to tradition. Right? Getting together for a meeting was always a traditional thing to do. Now it's going to be an intentional thing to do. And when we just have to meet just to brief people on it, the default will change. The default will be on video or call in or whatever, because the idea of assembling people without an actual intention for physicality will be a silly notion and a very expensive one. So I think that's one big one that will certainly change.
Yeah, I love, well, a couple of things you said that really resonated deeply. The first is you use the word accelerate, which is something that I've been hearing from a lot of leaders, and also something I've been sharing with a lot of people I've been working with, a lot of organizations, is, really, there's nothing new happening here. It's that everything has been accelerated about 5 years, right? We were probably going to get to this place anyway, but we were sort of thrust into it overnight. Which is kind of interesting. But the second thing you said that really resonated with me is the idea that really we have, this isn't going to replace anything, but it's going to kind of augment what we were already doing. This is going to be like another arrow in our quiver, so to speak, right? Another tool that we can use, this virtual meeting. So I don't doubt that it's very possible that, especially like on larger campuses, if you have people spread out across a campus in a physical location, we're just going to do a video meetup. Why do we need to all commute to a central building and a central meeting room to get together if we can just do a quick 15-minute check-in via video? I think that this is, to your point, it's going to be interesting. I think we're going to find that this is going to tremendously augment and probably, frankly, make us a lot more efficient organizationally on the back end of this.
It will. And that's where the defaults, whenever in life, whenever the defaults change, that's a transformative moment. Because remember, we always revert to our defaults. So hey, let's catch up. The default once might have been great. Let's meet somewhere. and get half an hour of commuting there, half an hour commuting back, you know, versus like the default now is let's get on a Zoom or something. So I think there's that. The other interesting thing though, Todd, is that because, you know, you made the point, none of this is sort of new. It's just been accelerated. And I think one of the contrarian reasons for why the acceleration happened is because of what I like to call the holdouts. You know, there were, even when big companies, you know, adopted new technologies like Slack, even when modern small teams adopted new practices to work together in a more modern way with modern tools, there were always a percentage of every group that were the holdbacks, the people who just said, hey, I'm not ready for that yet, so you still have to use email, or I'm not ready for that, we still have to have that meeting every Tuesday just because it's Tuesday. You know, these are the holdbacks that that just out of tradition, you know, had a hard time. They certainly weren't the visionaries. They were the pragmatists. They were the last people, you know, to cross the chasm. And the fact that they were suddenly through the pandemic absolutely forced, right, in one fell swoop in a matter of weeks to all jump over the chasm, you know, that was really, I think, what accelerated things, because there were always people who wanted new tech and liked new principles of working, but it was just very hard and took so many years to get the team there.
Yeah. Yeah. That, you know, that's interesting. I hadn't considered that, but I do, a certain amount of work with government agencies and groups too. And, you know, just the bureaucracy and red tape is so thick in government. And it's been interesting to see how all of that red tape has been cut out of necessity now. You know, it's like, listen, we've got to make this work. We have to keep functioning in some way. And so it's kind of interesting, you know, to your point, I think some of that was just, it was just inertia, you know, yeah. We're just stuck here. And now it's like, we have to deal with new ways of doing things because we have no choice. Work has to get done. We have to move forward. And so maybe we're going to sort of forego some of those things that have defined our, you know, bureaucracy or whatever for years and years.
Yeah. And, you know, and of course, if you get a whole team to make the move in 6 weeks as opposed to 6 years, you in some ways you realize a lot of those productivity gains that were always there. You know, they were always at your reach, but they were never fully realized because, you know, the whole team didn't make the leap. So I think that's one of the most exciting things coming out of all this is just everyone's tolerance for tech and new ways of working and openness. You know, I was in conversations at Adobe with people who said, oh, we would never allow remote working, really. You know, that would never be a policy we would adopt. And of course, everyone now has a different view.
Yeah, like Matt. For sure. Yeah, okay. So speaking of Adobe, you have products in really any organization that does any kind of creative design work in the world is probably using Adobe products. What are some things, some trends that you're seeing about in terms of how creative work is changing in the midst of this? Because if we think about creative work, you know, there are certain kinds of work, you know, where you can, it's really easy to work remotely. You know, if you're crunching numbers, if you're sort of, you know, doing sales, you can do virtual sales calls, things like that. But when you're doing collaborative creative work or iterative creative work with multiple people touching something, it can be really challenging. So what are some of the things you're seeing within the creative community right now in terms of how work is changing?
That's a great question. The history of creativity is largely these monolithic tools, you know, that you'd have to learn and huge learning curves and badge of honor if you could actually learn and use a product to create an experience. And I think that now, for a whole suite of reasons, there's this desire for amongst all people to be able to creatively express themselves and to stand out through their creativity, both at work and on social and at school. And, you know, my bigger picture thesis is that as labor becomes increasingly commoditized and automated, you know, humans will have fewer things that are uniquely human that robots and algorithms can't do. And so instead of us standing out at work and at school based on being more productive, which is typically how we were promoted, now we'll stand out more so because we were more creative. And what does that mean for like the average knowledge worker? It means being able to visualize data in a compelling way. It means making compelling reports that, you know, change the way people feel about things. You know, there's a whole suite of things. So anyways, if you buy that thesis that creativity will be a indispensable skill, you know, that can't be confined to the art class anymore in education and can't be confined to the design department in any big company, you know, then you have to ask, okay, what are the new methods people can create? Because we can't expect everyone to get trained up on a product like Photoshop, right? That is really capable, but also hard to learn. And so there's two types of creatives that I believe are emerging now. There's the collaborative first creative, and these are the kind of modern pros who, before they even start a creative project, instead of starting with a blank page first, they start with who they're working with first. And they leverage their assets and they leverage their components and they share their fonts. And everything's sort of a collaborative endeavor from the start. So there's a whole, you know, vein of innovation we're doing to, take care of this collaborative first creative. And then there's the content first creative. And this is the more like everyday, person at work who just wants to visualize something. And they don't think about starting from scratch either. They want to start from a template. They want to start from something as opposed to from nothing. And that's a whole different workflow and set of tool requirements. So those are the types of people we're accommodating these days.
You know, I really love the development arc of the Adobe products because, I am not a designer by trade. It's not what I do, but I often find myself in the position where I do need to be able to either work with design files or I need to be able to maybe just develop something as kind of a mock-up design for somebody who actually is a designer to be able to take it, actually turn into something that is usable. And it's really interesting because it used to be when I would jump into Adobe Illustrator and I was, creative director way back in the day, or Photoshop or any of the tools. I mean, it was, to your point, it was like walking into the cockpit of a 747 and trying to figure out how to get the plane off the ground, right? Like I had no clue, but now it's so easy and so quick for me to just get up to speed and just get something, some sort of a mock-up or something in place. And I would love to hear, I know this is a little bit off the topic of the, how we're dealing with the current times, but I'd love to hear sort of what is the philosophy of the development of products at Adobe and what has sort of led to that? It's so easy to use now. It's so easy to sort of get up to speed. Like what is sort of the mindset that's led to the development arc of the Adobe products?
Well, in the last few years, with the teams, I've tried to think about personalization of the journey. So when someone comes into Creative Cloud, which is our overall offering, really understanding what their desires are and what their skill levels are, and then really personalizing the journey for them, I think is paramount. Building a lot of the mechanisms by which you can access other people's assets. Mm-hmm. So we have this thing called libraries. And so if if I share a library with you, you get all the access to all of my fonts and colors and everything else. So if I'm a professional designer and you're not, you can still, be on brand and you can still use kind of components that I've made to get started and be more productive in your workflow. And then there's just new tools. It's also the principle of meeting a customer where he or she is, as opposed to making them always come to you. And have to kind of change their learning curve and their skill level in order to meet you where you are as a company. And that's been the hardest one, of course, because that requires some new products and it takes years, to really not only build, but also effectively like scale and grow and refine a new product. But it's fun, I'll tell you. I mean, it's creative people are the people that make life interesting for all of us. They're the ones who help us understand the world around us as it happens. And, these are the folks that really have like that most uniquely human capability that, books could be written about how people become creative. But it's like, wow, like we got to empower these people to do their thing.
We're going to dive back into the conversation with Scott Belsky in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is also brought to you by Skillshare. So listen, no matter what 2021 brings, you can spend it creating something meaningful with Skillshare's online classes because time is what we make of it. One thing I've taken out of the past several months is that the way that I invest the time that I have is going to determine the results I'm going to get on the other side of it. Well, with Skillshare, you can find inspiration in the moment and learn how to express your creativity. One of the great things about Skillshare is that if you want to learn something, learn a skill, learn about a topic, you can absolutely find it. You can absolutely do it. And you'll be learning from some of the best, some of the top people in their field on Skillshare. Hey, maybe this is the year you want to get really serious about really crafting a marketing and branding strategy for whatever the product is you're putting into the world. Well, Skillshare has classes to help you do just that. There are classes about personal branding, crafting your social media presence, social media strategy, storytelling for leaders, how to craft stories that matter by Keith Yamashita. Again, one of the best is teaching you how to tell better stories. Product marketing, creating compelling brand imagery, brand management, creating what sets you apart. So if that's something that's an ambition for you this year, Skillshare can help you accomplish your goals. And not only that, but Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. And Skillshare is also incredibly affordable, by the way, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than $10 a month. But right now, you can explore your creativity at skillshare.com/AC and get a free trial of premium membership. Again, that's skillshare.com/AC to get a free trial of premium membership. skillshare.com/AC. And we thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. And now back to the interview with Scott Belsky. One thing that came out of Adobe's recent research is that a lot of organizations, as a matter of fact, I think 91% of organizations that you surveyed said that the events of 2020, and specifically, I think the some of the social unrest and some of the things going on societally in 2020, in the midst of the pandemic, have encouraged them to incorporate real world issues into their creative work. And 49% of the people surveyed are developing campaigns with positive societal impacts. So how are creatives navigating this? You know, how are people thinking about the social responsibility of their work, as they're in service to clients, or sort of just as they're trying to develop their brands and find a way to both obviously get their message into the world, but also have a positive societal impact?
Yeah. Well, it's, it kind of brings me back to something I learned in the early days of Behance, which started in 2007. And over the years, being a global network of creatives posting their work every day, you start to, if you look at it a lot enough, like I did every single morning, you start to get this sense that when something is happening in the world, creatives absorb it like a sponge, for better or for worse. And then it ends up being channeled and pushed out again through their work in some way, shape, or form. And sometimes it's very explicit, and sometimes it's extraordinarily subtle. And so coming into this year, one example was when Japan had that huge earthquake and so many people died as a result. There was an outpouring of work in Behance that was all related to that. And it was almost like Behance in some ways was the pulse of the creative world, like interpreting and responding to this crisis through their own craft. Yeah. So here we are again. People have been forced to be home. There has been less travel. There's been less surface area of exposure to the outside world. And for many creatives, there's been more exposure to their inside world. I mean, we were all literally forced to be at home, and globally almost, right? And look within ourselves for inspiration, as opposed to, be in the forest or being on the streets of Paris or something. And so I actually believe this is going to impact the creations and the fashion and anything that's coming out of the creative community over the next few years, because it has to. It's a system. And so when you're asking about the response to kind of global unrest and the lack of like righteousness civilly and people kind of getting fed up with some of the things that are happening in their society and in government, it's amazing to see the creative world, tune us all into that struggle and embolden us, right? And that's the power of the creative community. And it always just, boggles my mind, how critical that is and how it always works that way.
Yeah. I like to say that great creative work kind of reveals reality, capital R reality behind small r reality, right? And I think that's what the best creative work does, is it sort of makes people, when they experience it, they go, oh yeah, it's the thing we always suspected, but we never could really put words to, and somehow it can only be expressed through great design, right? Or a great sculpture, a great, you know, great writing. And so there is a tremendous responsibility, I think, that the creative community has in the midst of all of this, to be basically just to be putting out there what they see, to be creating work that expresses what they see. Because often, you know, when we talk about, like, well, everybody's creative, anybody who solves problems is creative, but there are people who have the ability to see in a way that other people can't see. And that's really what a great artist does, right? Is they're able to see and express things maybe that are just a little bit beneath the surface of what everybody else sees.
I agree. And, you know, and in some ways also art is a compression technology for meaning. And when you look at it and you're forced to kind of unfold it and make sense of it in your head, you know, in some ways you're decompressing like what the artist was trying to express, you know, and sometimes it's beyond words, which is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. You're a busy guy. We're running low on time, but I wanted to ask you one more question, Scott, which is, and I'm really curious, as a leader, as somebody who has a unique position in the business community and the creative community, what are you optimistic about over the coming year or two? And what are you hopeful for right now?
Well, you know, I am optimistic by nature, and I think first of all that the questions we're asking about how is office space going to be used, and how are a lot of people talked about the business and the jobs that have been lost over the last year, but also there have been more small businesses created in the last year than I believe in the last 10 years. As they say, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, and such a cliche, but I think we're going to see that at a societal level. I believe that a lot of people are going to, you know, now having been forced to explore an alternative form of life and work, they're going to make different decisions. They're going to maybe have a different and maybe higher degree of confidence in taking the plunge and doing something, starting for themselves. And again, I think it's fascinating what technology is doing for the dreams and desires of people. You know, for all the negative that that we can point to technology for, it is very empowering that anyone can start a business and essentially have every part of their business available to them for one slow monthly, you know, small monthly fee, and you know, can put themselves out there. The idea of associating yourself with a firm or an agency or some other form of shingle versus just going out there as a soloist, you know, and doing your thing. So I'm very optimistic about the future of business as it relates to, like, and especially like small business, where even though it's sort of most dire point right now, I feel like it's going to get a lot better. Yeah. And, you know, of course, the role of creator and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, my wife and I mean, my business is largely live in-person events, you know, yeah. As you can imagine. Yeah. It's been an interesting year. I mean, a lot of stuff's moved online, but, you know, it's the question that we've been asking over the last year is, like, what do we really need? Like, we're fine. Like, what do we, you know? I think a lot of people have started asking different questions in the midst of this. And I think we're defined by the questions we ask. And so I think it's, you know, as those questions have changed, I think the next couple of years are going to be very different for a lot of people. I think we're going to approach life differently, maybe on the other side of this.
I agree. I certainly will. So yeah, I stand in that motion.
So Scott Belsky is the chief product officer of Adobe, also the author of The Messy Middle. If you haven't read it, come on, you got to read this book. Scott, it's been so great to have you back on the show. Thanks so much for sharing your time and your wisdom with us today.
Todd, thanks for the great questions. Good to connect and be safe.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends, with your colleagues, or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.